Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, August 29th, 2013. Journalist Katie Todd wanted her name as a byline on the front page, not the obituaries. When an assignment goes very wrong, she finds herself pursued by ruthless kidnappers. Well, that's the start of the blurb for Killer Assignment, the first love-inspired suspense novel by author Maggie K. Black. While this is her first foray into the love-inspired series, this isn't the first printed work by Maggie. A veteran journalist, she was also the winner of the first Grace Irwin Award winner for her novel If You Only Knew in 2010. And she also walked away with first place in the Canadian Christian Writing Awards Romance and Youth categories that year. Meg is on the phone with me from her home office in Newmarket, and we'll be talking to her about her writings in a few moments. But before we do, let's listen to Name Above from the Worship and Wonder CD by Derek Drover. And our interview with Maggie Black. Good evening, Maggie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
Well, just let's get started and go back to the beginning. How did you get started in writing?
Oh, I've wanted to be a writer for as long as I can remember. It was actually interesting. Recently, I read Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which is a book I will recommend to everyone who wants to be a writer. And it was interesting to read about her experience, how she became a writer, and to realize that it's a very common experience. Growing up and seeing the world around you and feeling the need to talk about it and communicate it and write it down. I have in my office a, I guess you'd call it a shelf, only there's a lock on it, so cupboard maybe, full of journals that I started keeping at the age of 10. I think it's been age of 10, age of 9 when I started writing short stories and poetry and diary entries pretty much on a daily basis. I wrote tons and tons of really bad poetry and bad short stories all throughout high school too.
Well, when you started getting into that, who were some of the authors that you started reading that kind of influenced you on the way as you developed and got to the point where you finally realized this is what I want to do for a living?
Well, the number one, the definite number one, is Madeleine L'Engle. Madeleine L'Engle is the author that as a teenager I loved the most, and I read her books over and over and over and over again. Not just the more famous Wrinkle in Time series, but also her her other books. And what I loved is how it combined stories of people going through daily life, conflict, falling in love, with boy, am I going to end up with that kind of stuff, with deeper questions and matters of life and death. Some of the books had some paranormal and sci-fi elements into them as well, some fantasy elements, which were a way to, again, convey deeper meanings and deeper questions about what we're doing here and why we're on the planet and how to get along with each other and how to find faith and stuff like that.
Well, were you aware at the time about Madeleine L'Engle's faith and how that was informing her writing, and did that have any influence on what you were doing with your writing?
I did. It was in university, actually, that I learned the most about her faith. I actually took a trip, a pilgrimage, down to Wheaton College. Wheaton College in Illinois has her archives, and I could sit there and read draft upon draft upon draft of how she'd written her books, because she gave them. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do now in this day and age, because everything's on computer.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, she typed it. And so her struggle, especially in terms of writing things that didn't get published or writing things that needed to be rewritten, I remember she said there was one story that, an anecdote that she really loved and believed in, that she tried to squeeze into several stories that got cut out over and over again by editors. And so her working out her faith through what she wrote and how she wrote it really had an impact on me. One main difference between writing fiction and, say, giving a sermon is if you are a sermon writer, you can write your sermon exactly the way you want it and then stand up on Sunday morning and read it word for word. And every word that you thought of on Saturday night comes out of your mouth on Sunday morning. Where if you are a novelist, you might be working with editors, you might be working with publishers, your story might evolve over time, other people may have suggestions, or you have to also be true to your characters, and so some of the messages and meanings you want to convey might, by the time you get to the end of the book, might need to be cut or changed in order to serve the overall story, so the story still flows.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's much more, I guess, finesse in working a message or your faith or what you believe or anything into fiction than there is into something like a sermon. And that was a learning thing for me.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is when you're doing a sermon, you are able to use your voice. So whatever inflection you wanted, whatever emotion you wanted to portray in those words, you can actually portray that from the pulpit.
Yeah.
But your readers, no matter how you create your voice, your readers may read it with another voice.
They might. And there's conflict in the book. So not all the characters are going to agree on matters of faith or matters of life. Where, when you're writing, or giving a sermon, that's only one point of view. You're not normally arguing with yourself back and forth.
Yep.
But in books, very much you are arguing with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spent a number of years in journalism. What sort of led to that choice as you were going on your way in your writing career?
A very, very practical choice. I knew age of 17, I was absolutely convinced that the only thing I wanted to do with my life was a novelist. And not just a novelist. I wanted to write books with romance and suspense in them, and I knew that as a teenager. I just realized that I needed a way to pay my own bills. I needed to pay my own bills, I needed to pay my way through university, I needed to put food on the table, and people who went in and got general fine arts degrees or general English degrees always end up finding a way to pay the bills. So I went into journalism purely so that I could find a career that was writing. And I heard Neil Gaiman speak recently actually about this, because he's another one who went through journalism as a route. And he said that journalism is a good start. It can be a good launching point for being a novelist, because it teaches you about deadlines, it teaches you the discipline. He said when you're a journalist and you get up in the morning, it doesn't matter if you feel like writing or not, you have to write, because if you don't write, there's nothing to go on the page, and then you will get fired.
I've often sort of chuckled when I've seen blogs and writer's conversations about, writer's block and that, and I've come through the same route. Is when you're a journalist, you can't afford writer's block. I mean, you may not create a masterpiece with every piece of work you do, but you actually have to sit there and write the work so that you can meet the deadlines.
Yeah. What people may not know about me when I say I have writer's block is that doesn't mean I spent the day, and I spend 6 hours writing 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 6 hours, 6 days a week is how I do it. Anything more than 6 hours and my body gets really sore. Anything less than 6 days a week, and by Monday I've completely forgotten what I was trying to communicate. But when I say that I've had writer's block all day, that literally means I've stared at a computer for 6 hours and I've kept writing and none of it was any good and it needed to be deleted the next day. Writer's block doesn't mean that I just sort of said, oh well, I'm going to go and, go out and go shopping and have a drink and not do any work. Writer's block means that I'm writing stuff that I know isn't very good, but if I keep going and have that discipline, yeah, it's the discipline and it's the perseverance and it's the faith that, again, I got this from Anne Lamott, so you have to give her credit, is that, sometimes you sit there and you write 5 pages and then there is a sentence on the bottom of page 6 when it starts to get good.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the first, 5 pages.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll come right back and talk to our guest, Maggie Black, about the art of writing suspense novels. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Forevermore from the Worship and Wonder CD by Derek Drover, who right now, and according to his Twitter feed, has spent the summer in the studio recording a new CD. And hopefully we'll hear that in the near future. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Maggie Black. Maggie, both the books that you've written have been in the suspense genre. One was a youth suspense. Now you're doing romance suspense. What attracts you to suspense, that whole genre? Because you did say that you started reading that and being influenced by that as a youngster as well.
And I've just sold a third book, and I'm working on it this week as we speak, and it's another suspense. So I have to figure out what attracted me to suspense, because right now it's hard to remember because I have that writer's block we were talking about before the break. What attracted me to suspense? I don't honestly know. It's funny. I guess there are certain things that really attract you as a person. I like action. I like things happening. I like people running from point A to point B and bullets being fired and, oh no, are they going to die? And I don't know what it is. It's just something that I really like. I have never been one to like the kind of movies where everybody is sitting around in a very beautiful house having very deep and meaningful conversations. I know a lot of women do. It's just not for me. I really like the movies that I liked this summer, as I really liked the new Star Trek movie that came out several months ago, where everybody is running around and getting shot at and might die at any moment, and yet it had those. Movies like that can have some amazing glimpses of conversation in the little bits of downtime in between the running and shooting. And for some reason, I've always been attracted to action. It might be that I'm a geek and that I really like sci-fi, and I really like suspense. It's just, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of answer? sure as that.
Well, and I sometimes I think that we are just attracted. Like, if somebody asks me why I like science fiction and fantasy, I don't know if I could put that into words either. I just like reading that style of writing and those writers. But looking at that, when you're looking at writing a suspense novel or even reading suspense novels, what makes a good suspense novel for you? What are the marks of a good suspense novel?
The stakes have to be high. We have to believe that something bad could actually happen. If you pick up my new book, Killer Assignment, and look at the dedication, there are two names you'll see, Paul and Tammy. And Paul is a former coworker who's an engineer who gave me a lot of the ideas, and Tammy, his wife, is my first test reader. And while Tammy was reading the first draft of my book, I got a Skype message from Paul saying, Tammy has just hid the book in the freezer and she won't get it out again until you assure me that no one's going to die. Which I love that.
Uh-huh.
This idea that she had hidden the first draft of my book in the freezer. So I had obviously scared her, which is why I knew this was good and why I dedicated the book to them. But the stakes have to be high. You have to honestly believe that something bad could happen to these characters, or that the person that they're with could actually be someone who's going to hurt them. When it's too clear from the beginning that no one's really going to get hurt, nothing bad is really going to happen, and you know clearly who the bad guy is, then that takes away a lot of the suspense.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you've got to be emotionally invested. You have to be on the edge of your seat going, no, nothing bad can happen to these people. I really care about them, and I really don't want them getting hurt.
Well, but adding to that with Killer Assignment is the romance aspect. How does that add, or what challenge does that create when you add romance into the suspense element?
Well, I mean, first of all, you've got because it's a suspense book, it tends to take place over 3 or 4 days. I mean, it tends to be a rather short narrative. I think Killer Assignment takes place over 4 days. And so people need to fall in love very fast. So making people fall in love very fast is tricky, and that's one way where the suspense comes into it, because these are people that are in a pressure cooker situation. In Killer Assignment, my two characters are literally running for their lives through Northern Ontario through the entire book. The book starts at Cobalt train station, and they're trying to make it to Kapuskasing up the highway, and they're literally being chased and pursued through the forest on the highway by people with guns, etc. So they're really forced together in that kind of situation. And that's when you really see what someone is like, how they respond to conflict, how they deal with frustration, what they're like when they're tired and they're soaking wet and they've been going through the woods. I mean, I've heard it said before, never to marry anyone until you've gone camping in the rain with them. Because if you're a summer camp person and you've met someone at summer camp, then you've got a pretty good idea of what they're like when they're dirty and they're wet and they're cranky. But before you marry someone, I've heard to get all your friends together and go camping in the woods and make sure there's no food and that everyone gets wet. And then you'll know if this is good husband or wife material, because you'll know how they deal with conflict.
Right.
And so this is the same way, only it's much more sped up. Plus there are lots of, you know, bad guys and guns and the chance that we might die.
Now, one of the elements of especially with the love-inspired line and things like that is they have a certain formula, is not the word I'm looking for, but there are certain aspects of the romance and of the novel that they're looking for. When you were doing that, did you find that challenging or constraining as a writer?
I had to get my head into it. That's the thing. And it's not just... I compare it to dance. If you want to succeed at dance, you have to learn some of the basic structures. Or if you want to succeed at music, you have to learn some of the basic structures. And what I needed to do before I could write a romantic suspense novel is to learn some of the basic structures. Now, once you've learned some of the basic structures, you'll see that they're everywhere. They're mm-hmm. in plays, they're in movies, they're in all different types of books. But there is sort of an art form to it, because you don't want things to go too fast or too slow, pacing issues. I guess underlining structure is the way I'd put it. One of the big challenges with the love-inspired line is that we know that we want the hero and the heroine to get together by the end of the book. They do mess with that formula sometimes, which is kind of cool when I read what they've done with other people's books. But basically, you do know who the hero and the heroine are, and you want to get them together. So what you have to do as an author is set the stakes so high at the beginning that you pick up this book and think, I have no clue how they're ever going to get these people together. And so figuring out how they're going to overcome those challenges to end up together by the end of the book is where the suspense lies.
And of course, the other thing, too, with the Love Inspired series is the fact that they include the faith element in there. And how much challenge is that to include a faith element within a romance novel, especially the bad rap that romance novels have got from Christians in the past?
The interesting thing about the way Love Inspired... Love Inspired, what I love about them is they're everywhere. They're in Walmart, they're in Shoppers Drug Mart, they're in the grocery stores. They are written for everyday people who may or may not be people of faith. My previous book was sold through Christian bookstores, which meant you had to find a Christian bookstore to buy it. And this book is for everybody. So part of it is a matter of having a faith element that really is accessible to everybody, whether or not you've been to church, whether or not you have a Christian background or Christian upbringing. The fact that you can understand, what they're talking about, that's important. Also, one of the things that Love Inspired Suspense that does not do, which sets it apart from other Christian books, is it doesn't have long teaching or preaching. It's really much more people living their lives organically as they go through it. I mean, in one way, it's very easy in suspense, because when you have a gun to your head, you're likely to pray.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got people, when your car is spinning out of control, when you've got a gun to your head, you're likely to pray. And then once that moment has passed and you're safe again, then your faith becomes very much organically a part of what do you do next. Do you resort to doing anything criminal if you think that's going to save your life? Do you save somebody else, or do you only look out for yourself? So matters of faith and conscience, really, it's like the saying, there are no atheists in a foxhole. Well, love-inspired suspense novels are all full of those tense foxhole moments.
Mm-hmm. And then there's always the question with the hero and heroine, is this relationship with God wants, and despite the roadblocks have been, how do they surmount the roadblocks, and what is God's leading in the whole thing, and that always becomes part of the plot as well.
One of the main issues in Killer Assignment is the characters really strongly believe at the beginning, and for good reason, that God is leading them in opposite directions, and they believe that God is leading them in opposite directions, and understanding, how do they work that out? What do you do when you're attracted to someone but God is clearly leading you in another direction?
Mm-hmm.
Also, often these characters in Love Inspired books often have had past relationships or past attractions that they never acted on, or people that they chose not to have a relationship with because they knew it wasn't the Lord's will, or it wasn't right for where they were going with their lives, or that the other person was a damaging or unhealthy person to have. So those conflicts are worked in, which is nice.
Right. Well, we're going to need to take one final break, and then we'll be back to wrap up our conversation with romance suspense novelist Maggie Black. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
There can only be one. There can only be one. Who is Father, Spirit and Son,
ever present, three as one,
was and is, and is to come.
Eternal Word, Immortal God.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Immortal God from Derek Drover's Worship and Wonder CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to finish up our conversation with novelist Maggie Black. Just a couple of quick minutes here and a couple of quick questions. When will Killer Assignment be available on bookshelves, and when can people start looking for it?
Start looking immediately, end of August. It is a September release. If you go to anywhere you do your normal shopping, so I've mentioned before, Walmart, Target, Shoppers Drug Mart, grocery stores, definitely Chapters, definitely Indigo, definitely Kohl's, bookstores. There will normally be a standalone Harlequin shelf somewhere or a Harlequin section in the book section. And the books all have on their spine what the date is of when they were released, and Killer Assignment is a September release. So
great.
If there are September books there, look for Killer Assignment. If they don't have the September books out yet, then wait a week. If they have the October books out already, then peek behind them and you'll probably see Killer Assignment hiding.
And what's next on your writing agenda?
So I've sold another another suspense. It's a serial killer book. And so we have a serial killer on Manitoulin Island killing people. And I'm working on that right now. I'm sort of partway through the middle of it. And then when I'm done that one, another one I've been working on my plate is set at a camp. So far I'm setting all of my love-inspired books in Ontario and using real Ontario settings, real cities, real places. And I really, really love that I'm able to do that. That's a great thing. It's hard to find good books set in Canada, and yet Love Inspired Suspense are letting me set all of mine in Ontario, which is rather awesome. Though I'm hoping to get beyond Ontario and hit some other provinces in the future, too.
And if people are interested in following you and for information about you and your books, how can they do that?
Maggie K. Black is going to have a website launched very soon. Unfortunately, it's not up yet. But maybe by the time this airs, if you go online and look for Maggie K. Black, you will find it. Also, I do have a page on the main Harlequin website.
Great.
People can find that as well.
Great. Maggie, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thank you to my guest, Maggie Black. And a quick program note, Arts Connection is moving to a new day and time. Beginning September 2nd, you can listen to Arts Connection every Monday from 9:30 to 10 p.m. If you miss us, look for archive programs on our website, www.selawministries.ca. That's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries. That's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca. Or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.